Major surgery is something most of us will experience one day. It can be traumatic, but it turns out that what doctors and nurses have done to you before, during and after the surgery, as opposed to the operation itself, can cause a fair bit of harm. Nick Christelis is a pain specialist and anaesthetist at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, and he's led a team which has radically changed the approach to hip and joint replacements.
It's about focusing medicine on the patient as opposed to the disease or the illness at hand. It's about reducing morbidity, which is sickness around coming into hospital. It's about reducing mortality, which is the death rate, ultimately increasing patient satisfaction and getting patients out of hospital quicker.
And you're talking about hip and knee replacements. So what was the situation before you did the study?
Generally, we know that hip and knee replacements are one of the commonest surgeries done now with people getting arthritis. And it's quite a big surgery. It's a big trauma to the patient. It's a big trauma to the body. Essentially, any surgery on the body leads you to drop off your levels of function. So people in the good old days used to take weeks, sometimes months, to recover from surgery. What we found is by changing the way we approach this, by looking at a patient-centered, evidence-driven package of care, we can actually reduce a number of bad outcomes for these particularly large operations.
And what you took was an approach which looked at what is commonly called the patient journey. In other words, from before they arrived at hospital through the hospital admission to discharge.
From start to finish. And when I say start, I mean even healthy people should be looking at keeping themselves well in the lead up to surgery that we all may have.
So the fitter you are before the surgeon chops you, the better.
Absolutely. Your drop in function amounts to hours and days as opposed to weeks and months.
And people underestimate that. So just take us through the process that you instituted.
For example, when the surgeons say, right, I need to operate on this person, they need to have a formal pre-assessment by a whole group of experts. So this includes the anaesthetist, it includes nurse coordinators, orthopaedic coordinators, physiotherapists, dietitians, and everyone really looking at the patient and deciding how best we're going to manage them in this whole journey that they're about to undertake.
So this isn't on the morning of admission?
No, this happens pre-admission. One of the key things about this is changing patients' expectations, and this is the most important thing, because we've all been taught, if you go into a hospital, you need to be sick. Well, now we're promoting a wellness model of care, so the patients are involved in the build-up to surgery. Sometimes they even get a choice of dates that they can have their surgery.
Actually, well, there's an interesting story around choice of dates, is that when you give people the choice of dates as they do in the private system, waiting lists start to disappear because people don't necessarily want it next week. They're happy for it to be scheduled for just before Christmas.
That's right. But it involves really promoting a wellness of care, and that means every member of the team needs to reinforce to the patient that they're not going to be unwell after the surgery. They're going to be up and about within hours of having their surgery. They're going to be eating and drinking within hours of having their surgery.
So it's a couple of the 16 things that you do. You've got a nurse coordinator, you've got a physiotherapist, you've got a dietitian visiting the person. Is it the week before, the month before, 3 months before? Because, I mean, if they're not that well, you need a bit of time to actually put in a program to start building up your muscles or what have you.
Sure. Well, it was, I think on average, it was probably a couple of months before because of preparing the patient appropriately. So getting them to improve their levels of activity, getting them to have a bit of physiotherapy, really educating the patients on what to expect when they get into hospital.
And the next thing that you did was, you know, everybody's told you've got to fast overnight, and then the theatre list is late. You're feeling pretty crap before you actually get the anaesthetic.
People get to us being dehydrated, they're cold, they're a bit nauseated because they haven't been feeding well. So you start off with somebody that's already unwell, and this is all doctor-induced being unwell. I mean, as an anaesthetist for a long time now, even to get my head around the fact that I'm about to anaesthetise somebody that's been drinking until 2 hours ago, it is a shift in change, and it takes time to change practice.
And it doesn't increase risk?
It doesn't increase risk. If anything, it reduces risk because you've got somebody that's hydrated, you've got somebody that's had a carbohydrate load, so they're ready to
withstand. Tell me about the carbohydrate load.
Well, it's basically just preparing patients for the trauma and the stress of surgery. What people don't realize is that when you have a surgery, the body reacts as far as hormones goes like they've been hit by a car. So there's a huge shift in hormones and a huge shift in enzymes and various chemicals within the body. And this basically knocks a person off their perch, if you want to look at it that way.
So how do you carb load them?
It's a hypoosmolar drink that they can take up to about 2 hours pre-op. And it's been shown to not increase the risk of people vomiting or aspirating, as we call it, around the time of surgery.
So it's a bit like a sports drink.
Yeah. It works.
And how long do they have to stop eating solids? Just in case somebody misunderstands our conversation here, you still stop solids more than 4 hours beforehand.
At 6 hours beforehand, that's exactly right. I mean, I wouldn't recommend anyone just eat and drink until 2 hours
bacon
before
and eggs,
surgery.
Yeah.
These enhanced recovery programs are done by centres where everything has been considered. I think in the build-up to surgery, 1 in 8 people were getting cancelled on the day of surgery in years gone by. If they were not very well, the hemoglobin levels were low, they had eaten or drunk. So having an enhanced pathway actually reduces the likelihood of people being cancelled on the day of surgery.
And then there's stuff that the anaesthetist does. So in the past, you've loaded people up with sedation and you've given them narcotics even before you've induced the anaesthesia in the theory that you're going to reduce pain.
It's relatively easy to give an anaesthetic. It's quite hard to give a good anaesthetic. So you've really got to look at the evidence. And the aim is, people don't understand this, when they're anaesthetized, their body still feels pain. So you need quite a big anaesthetic to stop the body reacting to pain. If I turn half of the body off with a spinal anaesthetic, which is an extension of what a lady gets when she has an epidural or a cesarean section, in effect, during the surgery, the patient does not mount that stress response to the pain, and hence they need very little anaesthetic to keep them asleep. So they wake up comfortable and they need much less pain control after the operation. And the key with pain control is to have a few pain medications rather than one pain medication in a big dose. And yes, we're going away from the opioids like morphine or oxycodone because they cause sedation, they cause nausea, and they really slow the recovery of these patients.
And you encourage the surgeons to do what people are used to, say, in the emergency departments, put in local anaesthetic around the wound.
It's not local anaesthetic around the wound, which is what we all do. We just squirt a bit of local anaesthetic on the skin. This is local anaesthetic in various layers during the surgery. So as they're operating, they're infiltrating local anaesthetic on nerves, on muscles, and it's a very specific thing that they do. Because if I know the surgeon's going to put in good local anaesthetic, well, I don't need to give them a lot of anaesthetic or a lot of pain medication through the case.
And there's much more attention to keeping you warm during the operation.
Actively warming patients. So we put these big hot air blowers on the patients, that fancy blankets that get hot air passed through them. We warm the fluids that we put into patients. So putting in cold fluid into a patient basically just cools them from the inside out.
And then cutting down on the morphine you give afterwards, because people, you know, hand out the old morphine pumps, and you're actually much more conservative about what you have after the operation.
Absolutely. If you give a good anti-inflammatory, if people are able to take anti-inflammatories with a couple of other types of pain medications, including simple things like paracetamol, newer pain medications called gabapentinoids that reduce nerve activity following surgery, you need to give a very small dose of morphine-based medication, and just for a number of days, not weeks.
And, I mean, all this is kind of important stuff for consumers to know, because they can start to query their surgeon about what they're going to do.
The patients need to start asking the right questions, and that means they're involved in their care. They want to be well through the time of their surgery. They want to be up and about really quickly after the surgery. And I stress, it's not one thing that makes the difference here. It's not the fact that the patient has had a spinal anaesthetic. It's the fact that everything is put together. Every single little step all counts in making the patient more satisfied and getting out of hospital quicker.
And more carb loading after the operation.
They can eat and drink almost straight away. And you'll find some amazing papers where you see people literally in the recovery room getting out of bed and walking around and starting their physio almost immediately.
Really?
Surgery.
Because you talk about within 24 hours, but you say there's nothing to stop you. I mean, the cement's set. I mean, it doesn't matter how the operation's done.
Absolutely. Operation is done. Again, you've got to find out, you know, what the surgeon's requests are. But if they're following the current evidence and guidelines, there's no reason why patients can't start the recovery, whether it be even on the bed in the recovery room.
You argue for a hospital discharge in under 5 days. Now, in the private sector, they often send you off to, you know, the rehabilitation hospital for hydrotherapy and, you know, a week or two of getting back on your feet, which you don't have that luxury necessarily in the public sector. Are you condemning people to delayed rehabilitation if you're chucking them out under 5 days?
No. One of the things in Europe where enhanced recovery is basically part of the norm now is most people are discharged straight home. If you do this correctly, there's no need for people to always go to the rehab unit for rehabilitation, because they've basically done their rehab before they've had their surgery.
Now, knee arthroplasty, knee replacement, can be a pretty lousy operation through no fault of the surgeon, but it's just not a good operation. And people have more pain than they were led to realize compared to a hip replacement. Right. Is there a difference between people who've had their knees done versus their hips? Because people can be bitterly disappointed with their knee replacement.
Knee replacement is a huge operation. There can be significant blood loss. It can be significantly long operation. And of course, having some foreign body put in your body is not without risk of infection, fractures. It can move as time goes on. And the key thing is to get that knee moving post-operatively. In other words, if that knee stays stiff, it's going to be really hard to rehabilitate.
Now, this is in the public sector, and the results of your study showed that it improves hospital discharge. And well, just give me the results of the study. What did you find?
One of the things we found is that we could reduce the hospital stay, but also, more importantly, we could improve the time when the patient was ready for discharge. So at day three, I think the patients ready for discharge improved from 40% to 60%, which is not insignificant.
And did you follow them up afterwards to see how they've gone at home?
Yeah, we followed them up. I think it was at 6 weeks and 3 months, and the side effect or complication rate was essentially the same as the patients that stayed in hospital for longer. Patient satisfaction was markedly improved, and the overall quality of recovery was improved as well. Patients had better pain control, and there was a tendency to be more mobile and have a better range of movement as well because their pain was so well controlled.
Now, in the public sector, there's an incentive to do this. First of all, the hospital network has a budget. You know, the hospital managers can decide where they're going to spend that budget. And if they want to spend it on a physiotherapist going to the house, they can, particularly if there's a saving at the other end in terms of readmission rates or early discharge. It's not so easy in the private sector. Even if an orthopaedic surgeon loved this idea and was willing, he or she is not remunerated to do this sort of work. There aren't the Medicare benefits schedule items to send the physio out. I mean, it suggests that you're not necessarily going to get the standard of care in the private sector through the fault of nobody but the system.
But there's no reason why this can't happen in the private sector. And in fact, since we've been doing this project, I've had a couple of private hospital groups of anaesthetists contact me, and I'm guiding them in setting up a couple of pathways. It doesn't have to be exactly the way we've done it. It can be whatever works for that group. In the private sector, generally you've got the same surgeon and the same anaesthetist and the same team, and it's a much smaller group. Whereas in the public sector, we've got tens of surgeons, sometimes even hundreds of anaesthetists. So that's quite hard in coordinating patient care.
So the words to use when you're having a consultation with your private doctor, if it is a private doctor, is do you subscribe to an enhanced recovery regime and what is it? And the same story if you're going to a public outpatient and you're being booked for a knee replacement or a hip replacement.
Absolutely. And the other thing just to mention is that this is not only for hip and knee replacements. This can be for any form of major surgery. And they're really pushing the boundaries overseas, doing it for operations on the lungs, doing it for really major abdominal operations, major cancer operations. Not saying that it needs to be done, but it can be done for almost any form of surgery.
Nick, thank you for joining us on the Health Report.
You're very welcome.
Nick Christelis is a pain specialist and anaesthetist at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne.